antelope.
And it was a good one, too, for a team of horses. Two on the bunks and one on top. Harley Davis and I drew there to Crown Point. Oh, gosh, all one winter. Over there to the mill. And my father sold that timber to Frank Dutton. Harry Goodrow told me several times during World War II, he says, Wade, if you'd had that tract of timber that your father sold down there, right now, you'd been a millionaire. He says, you could get anything, just about anything you might ask. That was perfectly straight grain wood, you know, they want a knot in it. Oh, beautiful. And you can't imagine what they use it for. That seems so awful. They went to the match factories down in Massachusetts. Now, that sounds silly, but they used to have matches that come in cards. I don't know if you ever remember them. They come in cards, and they were slipped down here on, with a strip on the bottom where you'd snap them off. And they had sulfur on the end of them, those old slow-burning matches. And you'd scratch one, and probably it took about six to light one because that darn wind would blow them out, you know. They won't have... want a flame to them until after they'd burnt a few seconds, you know. And but they used to come in boxes, those old-fashioned matches. I can remember just how they worked. And that's where they shipped a lot of those logs to Massachusetts in those match factories. My gosh. That's now, then, we didn't think anything about it. But now, of course, it would be horrifying because that wood, you know, was beautiful, beautiful. Straight grain, first growth pine. Yes, sir, that was really something. And I drew an awful lot of it. And all my drawing there was with horses. It was before the days of trucks, you know. They didn't have no trucks. So that we drew them with horses. Yeah, well, that was something to remember, and those things we used to do. We used to start in hauling, you know. Now our winters are different than they used to be, I'm sure. Because about every year, the lake would get so we could cross it with loads soon after New Year's, if not by New Year's. And Howard Stone used to be the first one across the lake every winter. He kept track of the ice. And when it got to be, well, 6 or 8 inches of ice, we figured it was safe enough for a team of horses, you know. Howard would go down, and he knew right where to go because of reasons. And the first reason was when you went out the lake, you wanted to get away from the docks because there was always eddies around the docks and there's never good ice. Then you went out into lake toward the south and circled out around until you got over about two-thirds, at least two-thirds of the way across, and then you circled right back north. And there was a reason for that, because over there in Gilligan's Bay, there's an old scow sunk. And it's still there today, I suppose. I don't think anybody ever got it out. And there was always eddies around that, so there's never ice there. So we'd circle around and back north and then into shore to get off the lake, you know. I remember right where we went. Exactly. Oh, gosh.
What made the scow sink?
I don't ever remember how it happened that scow sank there. If I ever knew, I've forgotten. But I know there was one there in what they call Gilligan's Bay, right north of the old, well, there used to be a dock there. Down southeast of where the Jew camp is now, the hotel, used to be Gilligan's Hotel. And there was a dock. They used to land the steamers there. And that little bay right in there, we called Gilligan's Bay. And that's where that scow sunk, and I don't know, I don't know to this day how it happened to sink there, whether they sunk it purpose, I don't know, I can't tell you.
Did the steamer also come to Crown Point Ferry?
You mean on this side?
Yeah, on this side.
I can just remember of its landing on the Vermont shore. And I'll tell you how I remember. The first time I ever went to New York was when I was 11 years old. And, now wait a minute, I'll verify that statement. I'll have to stop and think a minute. No, I'm mistaken. I'm mistaken. But I can remember the ferry, or the steamer, landing down there at Brooks's Dock, and then crossing over to Gunnison's Dock in Crown Point to pick up passengers, you know, or maybe freight, I don't know. But they landed there. They landed down here, I think I'm right, at what we call the South Dock, and that dock is all disappeared. But the North Dock, there is some of it left there. You can see it sticking out there and trees on it, and I don't know, maybe some piles are sticking up there. But the South Dock used to be right in front of where you drive down to the lake, right out there in front. There was a dock, and that's where they tied up. The first time I went to New York, the steamer landed at Larrabee's Point. We landed at Larrabee's Point and took on passengers and then went across to Fort Tye. And debarked, took the train to the head of Lake George, took the steamer through Lake George, took the train to Albany, and I always remember it. Now, it's a funny thing how you'll remember things when you're a kid, and when you get to be older, you can't remember nothing. As we were walking down Broadway in Albany, I had a hold of my mother's hand. I can always remember. We got down by what they call the transportation building down there at the plaza on the on Broadway in Albany. And there was a line of lights. And Mother says, "Wait, see those lights? Yeah, that's the boat we're going on." We went down on the night boat. And we started down the river. Well, got a long time to go to bed. My father says to me, he says, "Wade, if I can wake up early enough in the morning, I'll get you up, out on deck, and we can see Grant's tomb when we go by." And that was quite a sight. And besides, that was way up the north end of New York City then. Well, he got me up. He and I got out on deck. We went down by boats to Grant's tomb. And the Navy were conducting their fall maneuvers off New York. And they'd run the battleships into the river over the night. And there was a band playing on every battleship as we went by down the river that morning. Now, I always remember, we went around the tip of New York up into East River to dock. And my father stood and I stood upon the hurricane deck while the captain put that ship into a slip down there. And, you know, and that was a work of art. They backed him in, you know. Oh, yes. He stood right up there ringing bells, and I suppose everybody knew what they meant. And boy, they backed that ship right in, you know, boy, just as nice, you know, as could be. Well, I could talk quite a few minutes on that trip to New York. My gosh, I'll never forget it. I always remember two things that happened, I'll have to tell you. One, one day, we were in the company of Jim Fletcher and his wife and Mrs. Spaulding. Mrs. Spaulding was Gladys Fay's grandmother. She run a milliner shop over there in that house for years. And J.H. Fletcher, that's Jim Fletcher, run the store where Pratt's are. And it was a custom in those days to go to the city twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall, to buy their merchandise. There was no traveling salesman. And that's what they went for. And they'd invited my father and mother to go along for there was an excursion going down. Well, of course, we got down there, and the Fletchers, they went off about their business, and we had relatives in New York. My mother had cousins there, and of course, they knew we were coming, and they invited us one day to spend the day with them, and I can remember we went in the forenoon. We met them over there somewhere in New York. We went to Wanamaker's store. That was a great treat in those days, and that was on both sides of the street, and there was a passageway up 5 or 6 stories or more, where you went from one store to the other. And there was a restaurant up in there, beautiful. We had dinner up there. Then in the afternoon, we went to Coney Island. Well, my cousin Charlie Wright, notwithstanding he was a minister, he had a great sense he had a lot of fun in him, you know. He great sense of humor. And he took a hold of me and entertained me on the boardwalk. We come along down the boardwalk, and I always remembered there was a fellow and a girl sitting down there on the beach. And the tide was coming in. And Cousin Charlie says to me, he says, you know, they're going to get wet. Well, gosh, we stopped there and watched them. And of course, I think it's every seventh wave when the tides come in is the big roller, you know. They'll lap, 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 and then all of a sudden that old big roller will come in and it'll go up on the beach farther every time, every farther, you know. Cousin Charlie and I stood there, and every time them big ones come in, they come a little closer and a little closer. Well, they were pretty much occupied in each other. They weren't paying much attention to tides or anything else. And all of a sudden, an old big one come in, and they went right up around their neck. I always remembered that. Oh, boy.
Then they noticed.
They noticed then. Then another thing that happened. Well, there's a lot of things that happened, but we went to Bronx Park one day, to the zoo, you know. That was a great treat in those days. And, it was awful hot that day. It was in October, it wouldn't make a difference, it was hot. And everybody was tuckered out, you know, and hot and uncomfortable. We found a place where there was shade, and the women folks were getting tired, and they wanted to sit down. So, we sit there a few minutes, and finally Mr. Fletcher and my father decided they guess they'd take a little walk and see something, so I went along too. Well, my father was careless, you know, he didn't give it any thought. We got into the building where they kept the elephants. And they were feeding them, and all that interested me, you know, and I stood right there, and my father paid no attention, oh, he got sick of looking the way he went. Lord, when I looked up, I couldn't find nobody that I knew. Well, now I tell you, I felt pretty small down there in New York, you know, all so alone. I didn't know where to go nor how to find anybody, and oh dear, I was pretty nervous. Well, I went up and down that building pretty fast, and I couldn't find nobody. But I did remember where the women folks had sat down. And I went out there, and they were gone. They got up in the meantime, decided to do a little strolling around themselves. Well, I tell you, I was thinking pretty hard. And I thought to myself, what under the sun am I going to do if they don't find me or I don't find them? But I remembered where we lived. I remembered the street and the number. And I had my plans all made, if I couldn't find the folks, to find a policeman and tell him what trouble I was in and tell him where I live. And I knew he'd get me back, you know, to where we lived. But here was the funny part. I went back to the elephant building. Well, sir, I went down through that crowd, and oh, there was a crowd in there. And you know, I spotted my mother's hat in that crowd. Can you imagine that? Well, I wormed my way through there, and I found her, she wanted to know where I come from. Well, I told her what had happened. Well, of course, my troubles were over then. I always remembered it.
Then you came back the same way.
We came back, I guess. I don't know. I can't remember how we got back. We must have come home. Well, it seems though we must have come home on the train. Maybe. I don't know whether we did or whether we come back on another boat. I can't remember. And we come across to Larrabee's Point, and then the man that was working for us met us down there and brought us home, you know. Huh? Yeah, I was 11 years old. That must have been the fall of 1910. Because I'm 1 year older than the present year, and I was 11 years old, so that must have been 1910. Can't be anything else. Isn't that something? Well, Ann, you made mention that you wanted to rehearse or verify some of the statements about my uncle in the Civil War.
That's right.
Well, sir, I ran onto something the other day, right out of a clear sky. Down to John Riggs. You know, I got that table for the society over there, and I went down seeing that. I was kind of disturbed because I'd heard there's a little opposition to our having it, and I made up my mind I was going to lick it. So I went down to see John, and of course I told him, I says, it's all my project. I says, if anybody's got any arguments about it, you direct them to me, because I said, I'm the one that's thought most of this up. I says, although I says, to begin with, the man that actually mentioned our chairs and stuff over there was Ashley Duca. I says, we've had piled up behind the stage up there for, oh, I don't know how long, all these chairs and some of the old tables. And I says, they were dirty, I don't need to tell you. And I says, Ashley says, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't let the society have some of those chairs. They're doing anybody any good. And he says, there's nothing we'll ever use in the world. I says, I agree with you. I hadn't thought of it. So I says, I went down the hall one day, prowling around, and I discovered this table. And I thought, my gosh, that would make a nice table over there at the house. It's a long table, and I thought it would serve a good purpose in the library because it would be a place for people to sit down, several people to sit down and read if they wanted, or look over books, or whatever they wanted, you know. And I said, it occurred to me that it seems like that would work out good. So I went down to John's to tell him what I was trying to bring about. And while I was there, he says, you know, Wade, I got something I think you'd be interested in. Well, I says, maybe. He told where the auction was. I can't remember where the auction was, but he says, I was at this auction, and they had a desk. Now, he told me what kind of a desk, I can't remember, but it was a good desk, in a way, that they were auctioning off. He says, you know, I kind of thought maybe I'd like that desk if I could get it for what I could afford to pay. And he says, I run it up to $30, and I'd be darned if I didn't get it. And he says, you know, I opened the desk, and here's these books. Vermont.
Outside.